following program is brought to you in living color on
DailyGazette.com or wherever you get your podcast.
The Daily Gazette Company presents the Parting Shots Podcast. Now, here's your host, Daily Gazette sports editor, Ken Schott.
Thank you, Scott Giese, and welcome to the Parting Shots Podcast. Available wherever you get your podcast. Subscribe today. Thanks for joining me from the Parting Shots Podcast Studio in Schenectady, New York. Well, after a week off, I'm back and ready to get going here with another edition of the podcast. Had a great time down in Philadelphia visiting my mom. Took care of a lot of stuff. Cleaned out the garage. That took a couple of days. Also went through some memorabilia. Some of my old York Daily Record articles. My parents used to get the paper delivered to them via the mail. And a lot of my articles, it's amazing. A lot of the stuff I wrote back in the day as a part-timer and then later as a full-time writer. A lot of high school stories. I never realized I covered as much high school as I did down there. Swimming and tennis especially. And then amateur baseball down in the York County area. That was a lot of fun time. I spent 7 years at the York Daily Record, starting out as a correspondent in the fall of 1983, working a one-day internship that turned into a career at the paper. Journalism class my junior year. Took a journalism class my junior year, taught by two members of the paper, and one of the requirements was a one-day internship. And I got to cover the Baltimore Orioles playing a charity basketball game in Southern York County, and led me to covering the Hershey Bears for 5 years, covering the Harrisburg Senators for about 3.5 years, and then of course moving up here in August 1990, and helping to cover American Hockey League games and International Hockey League games. Remember the Albany Choppers back at the what was then Knickerbocker Arena, now MVP Arena. Of course, the Choppers folded midway through this season. That's 1990-91 season. And then it was right about that time that Union College announced that they were moving their men's hockey program from Division III to Division I. And I got that beaten. I've been on, except for a couple years hiatus. I'll start my 30th season covering the program this fall. Of course, the new arena, the M&T Bank Center, there at Mohawk Harbor, and they're having a ribbon cutting ceremony. I'm going to get a tour of the new rink on Thursday, so that'll be a lot of fun to see what's going on there. So as far as this week's podcast, we're going to, of course, Mike McAdam, Gazette's horse racing writer extraordinaire, will be on with his At the Track with Max segment. We're going to look ahead to the Alabama coming up on Saturday, and we're looking back at what happened last Saturday, not only with the Sword Dancer, but what happened at the last race of the meet where they ran the 12th race at the wrong distance. Mike will talk about what happened there and the ramifications from that. And our good friend Ken Fang from Awful Announcing, we're going to talk about a variety of sports media topics, topped by the announcement that the ESPN has purchased a stake in NFL Network. And we'll talk to Ken about that and what the impact is, especially with Red Zone. A lot of people are wondering what's going to happen. 7 hours of commercial-free football. Is ESPN going to mess that up and start putting commercials on? Let's hope not. But that's something for down the road. Ken Fang will talk about that and a variety of other sports media topics as well. So coming up, it's Mike McAdam with his At the Track with Max segment. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast.
If you really want to know what's going on in your community, you have to read the Daily Gazette. We don't take a side. We're right down the middle, and we're going to get to the truth. Our reporters and photographers are out in the field bringing you updates every minute with trust, accuracy, and integrity. From the first page to the last page, independent, probing journalism. We're finding out what's going on in the community where nobody else is covering. It's who we are. It's what we do.
Hi, this is Daily Gazette Associate Sports Editor Will Springstead. You're listening to the Parting Shots Podcast with Daily Gazette Sports Editor Ken Schott.
Welcome back to the podcast, and I know you missed it with me on vacation, but Mike McAdam, our Gazette horse racing writer At the Track with Mac Saban, back after the week off. Mac, did you miss me?
Of course I did, Ken. I I love these weekly conversations, and there was an empty hole in my life last week when we didn't do it. So that would be a yes.
Well, I was busy down in Philly helping my mom clean out the garage, and I was like a long day. We had a long couple of days cleaning out the garage, but we got a lot of stuff done, and it's good for her. I mean,
there any childhood memories that got wound up in the garbage can?
No, we kept some. There's still my Holy Ghost Prep varsity jacket still hanging up in the garage.
Ooh, sweet.
And I got one of those.
No tricycle or anything that's all rusted out that should have been thrown out 40 years ago?
No, none of that. They do have, there was a wiffle ball bat that was kind of broken and got rid of that because it was taped up and it was time to get rid of that. I still
that's a goner.
Still have one of those Mylic ice street hockey masks hanging up there in the garage.
Wow.
So, yeah, it was good to get. My parents used to save clips of my York Daily Record stuff, so I have a lot of those clips I'm going to go through and maybe post on Facebook. It's a lot of great memories from I started my career down in York, Pennsylvania, so it's going to be a lot of fun to go through.
Yeah, that'll be awesome. That'll be fun.
Yeah. So enough about my vacation. Let's talk about it's Alabama Week coming up. But before we get into that, the last Saturday's feature was the Grade 1 Sword Dancer on the turf. The race itself was thrilling, but we also got some interesting news right before the race that it would be named in honor of Christophe Clément. How fitting of a move by Naira was this?
Yeah, I mean, it was really kind of a no-brainer, and you know, it was a class move by Naira. You know, the guy was such a mainstay on the Naira circuit since like the early 90s and won a lot of big races, including the Sword Dancer, which he won that five times, which is a record, with four different horses. He had a horse named Gouffo who won it 2 years in a row. So it was really a race that he targeted. So if anybody's going to have their name on it, it should be him. It was a great way of honoring Christophe Clément, who died at the age of 59 in May. He had some kind of weird, rare eye cancer and just couldn't recover from it. So he will be greatly missed. Is already being greatly missed at Saratoga, but next year when this race rolls around, which is like pretty much the most important turf stakes of the whole meet, you know, the memories will come, you know, kind of flooding back about him. Now that the race is named after him. So it was very appropriate. The race itself was amazing. El Cordobés wound up splitting Nation's Pride and Rebel Red right before the wire to win by a short margin. So the race was tremendous. I will give a little shout out to my guy Rebel Red, who's the horse that I wrote about last week. He's missing his left eye.
Ooh.
And he ran great. You know, he didn't miss by much and looked like he had a shot at the top of the stretch. So a little shout out to Rebel Red, and the race was amazing, and next year when it rolls around, it'll be the Christophe Clément turf. So good move by Naira.
Great. I mean, before we came on the air here, I was asking about the pronunciation of both the first name and the last name. I'm thinking, I'm thinking Bill Clement, so it's pronounced like that. It's not.
Well, actually, speaking of pronunciation, I wasn't sure how to pronounce El Cordobés. I'm still getting it wrong. I had to pull up the replay and listen to Frank Miramati's call just to get the proper pronunciation, and I wrote it down. It's right in front of me, El Cordobés. Because it's spelled E-L and then letter space C-O-R-D-O-B-E-S, Cordobés, or how, but I guess it's Cordobés based on Frank Miramati's call. So I did my homework. I went back and looked at the replay. It's a fun replay because the race was great, yeah. But I kind of need to go back in there just to figure out how to pronounce it. The horse doesn't race, so it's like the first time he's ever raced over here, so we're really familiar with him. So I wanted to make sure I got that correct, and then I still screwed it up just now anyway.
It's been, well, in our business, though, it's more important to spell it correctly than it is to
print. We got faces for radio and voices for print,
yes.
So that's what I always say.
Well, Saturday ended on a sour note, though, when the starting gate was positioned incorrectly for the last race on the car, which caused the 12th race to be run at the wrong distance. What happened there, and what was the fallout?
Well, what happened exactly is, so on the turf courses, so that the inside paths don't get all beat up, you'll see at the beginning of a card, they'll announce that the temporary rail is at 9 feet or temporary rail at 18 feet. So what they do is they set up a plastic white, removable rail in the middle of the course so that the horses aren't running over the same route of ground every time because the turf course gets chewed up. So they kind of shift it around a little bit. And on Saturday, the temporary rail was at 18 feet. And when you do that, you have to, there's a specific spot where you set up the starting gate for a mile and an eighth, which is a little bit different from when you set it up where the permanent rail is. Like if there's no temporary rail and they're actually running on the inside of the course, and they just made a mistake and put it in the wrong place, which is one thing, but it was compounded by the fact that nobody noticed it until the race was over. So it was run at a mile and a 16th. Maybe a 16th of a mile doesn't sound like a lot, but it really is, especially when these races can be decided by a couple inches. People are doing their handicapping and wagering based on the race being at a certain distance. And when it isn't run at that distance, it's just a really, really, you know, it's really kind of a Mickey Mouse thing to happen, especially at a big stage like Saratoga. Everybody's watching. I mean, they drew over $30 million in all sources handle on for the whole card on Saturday. So there's a lot of money on the line here. And when you make a mistake like that, it really is bad for the track. It's bad for the sport overall. I mentioned I wrote a column on Monday mentioning that, you know, racing is really trying to compete for an ever, you know, for the betting dollar from, you know, with wagering being legal in all sports now. And you can't be doing stuff like this because it really shakes the confidence. You know, people question the integrity of the sport when they don't get the simplest stuff like this correct. So the fallout was, so NYRA put out an apology and explanation. They had a quote from one of their stewards. New York Racing Association employs three stewards who are the judges. They're basically the referees of, you know, the rules and everything. One of them is appointed by NYRA. One is appointed by the New York State Gaming Commission, and one is appointed by the Jockey Club. And the three of those judges are the ones that kind of oversee the, make sure the rules are being followed. And they didn't catch it. You know, one of them, Victor Escobar, who's the NYRA rep on the stewards panel, you know, there's a quote from him apologizing to the fans. So I thought they got out in front of it a little bit instead of just leaving it to the media to mention it and then maybe it goes away. They did say that they implemented some protocols where the stewards will, before a race, double check and make sure the starting gate is in the right place, which, you know, sounds like something that should have been in place all along anyway, mm-hmm. until something like this happens. So we're going to move forward. It was just a really bad look. And again, I can't blame people who question the integrity of the sport when stuff like this happens, because it just shouldn't happen. There's a lot of money on the line, and you're going to turn people off if you're not doing the simplest things like this. It was a good day when they announced around 5:30, 5:15, whatever it was, that the Sword Dancer would be renamed after Christophe Clement next year. And then a couple of races later, the card ended on it, you know, with a real thud when this happened.
Could NYRA have invalidated the results of that race because of that?
No, because it was made official before anyone pointed out. And at that point, you know, payouts are given to the winning tickets and stuff. If they had noticed it before the race was made official, not sure what would have happened, but they might have, like, held off until they sorted it out. I mean, really, people should have been refunded their money. But once it's official, you know, the tote system starts paying people, and you know, the horse is out of the barn at that point, the genie's out of the bottle. So you can't really do anything, you know, retroactively, and unless they had figured this out before the race was official.
Okay. Well, the 2024 Horse of the Year, Torpedo Anna, is back at her old familiar stomping grounds at trainer Kenny McPeak's barn in Saratoga. What's she up to these days, and what's next for her?
Well, what she's up to is we were over there on Sunday morning to say hi and watch her go out and breeze in preparation for the personal ensign on Travers Day, August 23rd. It'll be her first time racing in New York. She's run four times this year already. She's won three of them. The only loss was in the La Troyenne on Kentucky Oaks Day at Churchill Downs on May 2nd, and she got kind of banged around pretty good, which kind of wiped her out her chances of winning that one. But otherwise, she's won Grade 2 Azari, Grade 1 Apple Blossom, and she's coming off a win in the Grade 2 Fleur-de-Lis against the short field, which she won by 3 lengths and did her business and, you know, looked like she hasn't lost a step from last year when she was named Horse of the Year, winning races like the Coach Club American Oaks at Saratoga and finishing a very close second to Fierceness running against the males in the Travers. So she looks like she's in pretty good form. She'll be a big favorite in the personal lines, and I'm not sure yet who else will be showing up for that race, but she'll bring a little extra star quality to Travers Day. That is for sure.
Of course, that's next week. It's hard to believe it's next week already.
Here it comes.
Yeah. Well, before we get to that, though, because we mentioned the Grade 1 Alabama Stakes, is Alabama week. And of course, that's the highlight of Saturday's race. So what can Saratoga fans expect out of the three-year-old filly equivalent of the Travers on Saturday?
Well, it's a kind of a short field. It's 6 horses. One interesting horse in there is Nitrogen, who ran on turf for 8 of her 9 starts, and the only race that she ran on dirt was in the Wonder Again at Saratoga, which was supposed to be run on the turf, and it was rained off, and she wound up, trainer Mark Cassie said, what the heck, I'm going to leave her in and see how she does on this muddy track on the dirt. She's never raced. She's trained on it a few times, but never raced. And she won by 17 lengths, and so then her next start, she ran in the Belmont Oaks Invitational. She was back on turf, but he said before the race, not after that race, that he was looking at the Alabama. So Nitrogen is a really interesting, you know, if they had an Eclipse Award for three-year-old divisions on the grass, it would be slam dunk already over with the great season she's had. She's won 2 Grade 2s and 2 Grade 3s on the turf already this year, but they don't. So he's thinking, you know, there's no real standout that has kind of, you know, not like Sovereignty in the three-year-old male division. I mean, he's the clear leader. There's nobody that can really say that in the three-year-old filly division. And if she bangs out one like, in the Alabama, she goes to the top of the list. She's not going to do that by staying on the grass. So she's good enough. And, you know, it was an inadvertent experiment when she ran in the Wonder Again in the mud. And he saw nothing there, obviously, to dissuade him from trying her on the dirt. I haven't seen the odds come out yet. I believe she'll probably be the favorite. Her stablemate, La Cara, another interesting story. She was supposed to run in the Coaching Club American Oaks earlier in the meet, and then there was a quarantine for the Strangles over at Mark Cassie's barn. I just asked him on Sunday, like, so what was it like when you found out? This is the morning of the race. They had to scratch her because some other horse in the vicinity had gotten sick. And he said, when they gave me the preliminary word, she was out of the stall at that time grazing. And I actually literally grazed her for 2 hours waiting to find out exactly what was going to happen. And then they came back and said, yeah, you're shut down. And then she had to scratch. It was very disappointing because she was going to go into the Coaching Club American Oaks with a real big shot. So they missed that one. It's very difficult to recreate what happens in a race during training. So, but they've been doing the best they can to keep her in the same form that they had her in the Coaching Club American Oaks, or going into it. So 6 horses, another one in there is Good Cheer, who was having a, you know, lights out season until she ran the Acorn and finished a disappointing 5th to La Cara back on Belmont Stakes weekend. So she's looking to rebound off of that. But then the one that jumps off the page that is really, really interesting, because you don't ever see this, is a filly named Queen Azteca, who is running in the U.S. for the first time. She started her career in July of like a year ago in Norway. I didn't even know they had thoroughbred racing in Norway. She's been running in Sweden. Then she ran in Dubai. And interestingly, she's run against males her last 3 starts, including the UAE Derby, you know, which carries Kentucky Derby points. So I don't know what they're doing with this filly. She went back to Sweden in June and won a race there, and then she's coming off a second-place finish again against males going 1.5 miles. in the Jackie Klubin Svensk Derby at Jagersrow in Sweden. Speaking of pronouncing stuff horribly,
I
threw that one with only like a one syllable off or something like that. But and I looked up Jagersrow, which is a thoroughbred track in Sweden, and Union hockey fans will get a kick out of this. It's actually located in Malmo, Sweden, which of course is the hometown of Sebastian Widmar, who was a very good hockey player for Union College back in the day. So I've been doing my Swedish thoroughbred research. It's just, you never see this. I mean, Norway is crazy enough as it is, but there's, she's run four times in Sweden. And, you know, I don't know what the thoroughbred scene is there, but they like her enough to send her to the Grade 1 Alabama over here. So let's see what she's got.
I can't imagine having much of a summer in Sweden and Norway.
I don't know anything about stuff like that. I mean, her races in Sweden when she, last year were in, she ran in Norway in July and then August, you know, right around the same time as the Saratoga meet, she ran in Sweden and then kind of ran this year. She ran in Sweden in June and July. July 13th was the Jockey Klubin Svensk Derby. I just like saying that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it seems like their season there is, you know, kind of parallel to what we do here, you know, during the Saratoga meet. So she should be in shape. Now she's coming off two good races. I don't know how she stacks up against LaCara and Nitrogen and Good Cheer, but we're going to find out on Saturday.
Well, let's wrap this up with a hockey question. Has the Stanley Cup made its appearance yet up at Saratoga?
No. And I remember last year we were anticipating that it would. Haven't heard any word on that lately, but I know it was at like the end of the meet. It was closing weekend when it showed up. And I firmly believe we're going to see it again. Vinny Viola, of course, is the owner of the Florida Panthers, and he owns a lot of big thoroughbred horses. He's a half owner to Mindframe, who's going to run in the Jockey Club Gold Cup later at the meet closing weekend, as a matter of fact. So I firmly believe we're going to see it closing weekend. It makes a lot of sense, and we did last year, so why not?
Yeah, I've been waiting to see that, to see if they bring the cup back up here. So, well, Mac, enjoy the Alabama Stakes on Saturday. And, of course, you can catch Mac's coverage online at dailygazette.com, including his Nitrogen story that will appear in Wednesday's print edition. It'll be online on sometime on Tuesday. So go to www.dailygazette.com and read that story, and follow Mac's coverage on X at Mike_McAdam. Mike, thanks again, and we'll get you ready for Travers Week next week.
All right, I'll be here. We'll have a lot to talk about next week, that's for sure.
I imagine we will. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate
it. Thank you, Ken.
That's Mike McAdam. Coming up, we're going to talk a variety of sports media topics with Ken Fang of Awful Announcing, including the purchase of the NFL Network by ESPN. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast.
Every referee, umpire, and judge in high school sports, we want to say, we see you.
We see everything you do for us that goes unnoticed.
We see the positive role models that you are.
We see the way you get unfairly criticized just for doing your job.
The truth is, we couldn't play without you.
So thank you for investing your time in us.
Thank you for protecting the integrity of the game, no matter what.
We hope you always know how much we appreciate you.
Because without you, this is just recess. It's not really a game.
Thank you for always making it possible for us to play the sports we love.
Want to serve the students in your community? Sign up to become an official in New York at highschoolofficials.com.
Hi, this is Craig Conroy, Calgary Flames General Manager, Clarkson Hockey Legend, and New York State Hockey Hall of Famer. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Welcome back to the podcast, and a lot of sports media news coming out the last few days. And here to talk about it, as we always like to have him on, our good friend Ken Fang from Awful Announcing. Ken, how are things going?
Oh, very good, Ken. How are you?
I'm not too bad. Your summer going well?
Oh, it's too hot, but that's okay. did some traveling in Japan and Taiwan, but great to be back.
Yeah, I saw some of that. How was that?
Oh, it was a lot of fun. And what's interesting, a lot of things happened out there, including Hulk Hogan's death. And you know, wrestling is big in Japan, so his death was treated, was covered quite heavily over there when he passed. So it was quite interesting to watch.
Yeah, so, well, a lot of interesting news in the media, as I said in the introduction. Of course, the big news that came out just recently is ESPN has acquired NFL Network and other media assets from the NFL in exchange for a 10% equity stake for the NFL and ESPN. What do we make of this move?
Well, it's a way for ESPN to continue to get NFL games. They're basically ensuring the fact that Monday Night Football will remain on ESPN. They'll still be in the Super Bowl rotation. By getting NFL Network, it becomes part of the stable along with ACC Network and SEC Network. ESPN is also putting a standalone direct-to-consumer streaming product, which will be out on August 21st. And when this deal is eventually approved by the feds, which ESPN hopes and Disney hopes and the NFL hopes, you'll eventually see the NFL Network on the ESPN streaming product sometime after 2026 if everything goes well. But if it doesn't go well and someone in Washington decides, a guy in the White House decides that he doesn't like this idea, then the whole deal could fall apart.
But, he's not grifting, is he?
I don't think so, but you never know. You know, if Disney decides to bend the knee and said, you know what, we're not going to do it, then they won't do it. So we'll see what happens. A lot of things could happen, but if everything goes well, probably by the end of 2026 is when NFL Network will be on the ESPN standalone streaming service.
I guess the big question a lot of the NFL fans have is over what's going to happen with NFL Red Zone. Is ESPN going to mess around with that and basically change the way it's been produced over the last few years? Obviously, Scott Hansen has done this for many years, and it's been 7 hours of commercial-free football. Is there a worry that ESPN is going to make it commercial football with, I mean, instead of it, you know, having interruptions with commercials?
Well, let's put it this way. The NFL is still going to own NFL Red Zone. They're still going to operate it. They're still going to distribute it digitally. ESPN gets the rights to NFL Red Zone, the name, and they also get to put it on that streaming service eventually when they get hold of NFL Network. But ESPN is not going to own it. ESPN gets the name Red Zone. They get to use it for whatever sport they want. They can use it on the NBA. They can use it on MLB if they get the rights back. They'll be able to use it on college football. Scott Hansen said he would love to be on that on a college football Red Zone channel. They can use it on the NHL. They can use it on any sport they want. It's just the fact that the NFL will still, it's confusing, I know, but the NFL will still own it. They will still distribute it. They'll still produce it. It's just the part of this deal, the ESPN gets the rights to use the name. So, but they'll own NFL Network. As you mentioned, NFL gets a 10% stake in ESPN, and ESPN gets a few more games to go along with it as well.
Are we going to see NFL Network personnel on ESPN and vice versa? I know Rich Eisen's show, which is not really an NFL Network show, but the talk show he has, which I think is on Roku, but we know that's going to ESPN. But yeah, will we see like Adam Schefter on NFL Network or like Colleen Wolf on ESPN?
I wouldn't be surprised. I think now that NFL, what's interesting is that, Ken, is that remember, I think earlier this year that ESPN got rid of their Los Angeles studios? Well, they get it back now.
Yeah.
To the NFL Network. They're going to be in SoFi Stadium, which is where the NFL offices, NFL Network offices are, so, and the studios are. So they get to go back to L.A., and they get to produce the NBA. So I would not be surprised to see Mina Kimes on NFL Network. I wouldn't be surprised to see Rich Eisen. He's going to appear back on ESPN anyway as part of a deal to put the show on his show on ESPN, the streaming service. But as far as other people like Kurt Warner, probably he'll get to do some games on ESPN. Maybe we'll get to see other maybe Peter Schrager, who left ESPN. Well, I mean, who left NFL Network to go to ESPN. Maybe he makes appearances back again. So, you know, for some of the guys who, and don't forget, Adam Schefter got his start at NFL Network. Mm-hmm. So everything old is new again. So it's going to be interesting to see what talent, and is that dreaded thing like a lot of people dread, Stephen A. Smith appearing on NFL Network. I wouldn't rule it out.
Oh, dear Lord. Maybe he can go out there and make his tape his appearances on General Hospital. Yes, I see General Hospital once in a while. Trust me, when I'm off on Mondays, my wife watches it. So, but I mean, the games, of course, as you mentioned, they're going to get additional games. Those London games, those, you know, European games, I mean, they'll basically be ESPN. I mean, I don't know if they'll use like Joe Buck or Troy Aikman for those games, but I imagine, you know, they could use them up Rich Eisen like they have NFL Network has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so NFL Network will get to keep 7 games. It's a whole convoluted system here, but remember those games that we had consecutive, the simultaneous games on both ABC and ESPN? We had 4 of those games last year. Mm-hmm. Well, those 4 games will go away. They'll go to NFL Network. But also, a couple of other games will be added to ESPN's schedule. So they'll probably be on a Saturday. And then 4 other games, three other games get licensed from ESPN. I guess those London games that we're talking about, a couple of them were on ESPN Plus. They'll go over to NFL Network. So NFL Network still has they still have to have 7 games to stay on cable and pay TV providers. So if they have less than that, the cable networks, the cable providers and the pay TV and direct TVs, they could get rid of NFL Network. So now they'll still have 7 games, but also ESPN gets a few extra games on their schedule too. So in all, to keep this all together, just consider that ESPN has control of, I think, somewhere like 28 or 30 games, and that's going to be stunning for them, just to be able to think that to think of this. ESPN once had a horrible relationship with the NFL under John Skipper. There was thought at one time that they would not retain the rights to Monday Night Football. President Jimmy Pitaro comes in, and now look what's happened. NFL Network is now will be eventually under ESPN auspices, and they get Red Zone, the name, they'll get a whole bunch of, and this never would have been thought of as recently as 5 years ago.
Yeah, it's amazing. Speaking of ESPN, they announced, along with Fox One, to launch a combined bundle offer. Was this sort of what we were going to see, you know, with which included Warner Brothers Discovery, which ended up falling apart? Is this something similar to that?
Yeah, and remember that this was killed last year, what was called Venue, that Warner Brothers Discovery, Fox, and ESPN would get together and put their sports offerings on this thing called Venue. I think it was going to be $39.95, Ken.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not, or $42.95. I can't remember the price point. But you would have had a lot of baseball. You would have had like half of the NFL packages amongst them, and you also would have had one half of March Madness on there. You wouldn't have had, but you wouldn't have had all of everything. That's the problem. But with ESPN and Fox getting in bed together to bundle this, remember the old cable bundle of bundling things together and bundling your internet and cable?
Yeah.
This is a little bit of an offshoot of it, and I wouldn't be surprised to see more streaming services get together and bundle. But, for those subscribers who are never going to be part of a cable package, this is one way to get 2 networks together and get Fox, get ESPN, and get their sports packages all together. And, it's the NFC and Monday Night Football, but still you're not getting all of football together. So it's still a lot of money to spend. But still, I wouldn't be surprised if we'll see more bundles down the line.
Wow. It's going to be $39.99 per month starting October 2nd. Is that a decent price?
I think it's better than the $42.95 that we're going to get from Venue, but I'm still waiting to see. I'm still a little skeptical of it. I think that'll eventually go up, as everything usually does. You know, YouTube TV used to be a great great bargain, but now it's $82.99 a month to get it for the base package. Kind of similar to what you would have to get if you're going to get Spectrum or Comcast. A little bit less expensive, but still quite high. So it all depends on what you want. If you feel that this is good, but to me it's still too high because you're not getting everything. You're getting the World Series. You're getting the NBA Finals. You're getting the Daytona 500, the half of the NASCAR. You're not getting all of it. So there's still a lot of missing pieces in here in this bundle.
Yeah, it's amazing. Big announcement also yesterday is UFC announcing a deal with Paramount. And there's, I got to be careful how I say this, the possibility of a match on the grounds of the White House. But let's try to avoid the politics. But what does this deal mean to UFC?
It's big. I mean, the conventional wisdom before yesterday, Ken, was that UFC was going to split its media rights deals. So, like the numbered fights, which were part of the pay per views, would go to one company, and Paramount was going to get the UFC fight nights, which were free, basically on ESPN Plus. Paramount closed last week on its deal so that Skydance took it over. David Ellison, who is the CEO, told TKO, which is the owner of UFC, that they're interested, and they said, look, we want to get this, we want to get at least part of it. So it looked like they were going to get that. But then right after they closed, David Ellison came back and said, look, we want everything. We don't want just part of it. We want the whole enchilada. And with the scarcity, Ken, of sports rights that are coming up, I think MLB comes up maybe in a couple of years. The NFL might come up. So there's really not much in the stratosphere for sports, which is really needed to get people to hook onto your streaming service. So for Paramount to get everything for a $7 billion deal for 7 years, and to get younger, to get people to be interested and get and not only that, eliminate those pay-per-views, which were the numbered fights on ESPN Plus. Now you just pay your $12.99 and you get everything for UFC. That's probably a price point that probably a lot of subscribers won't be able to pass up. And again, you were talking about some numbered fights being simulcast on CBS. Don't forget this, Ken. The very first mixed martial arts fight was aired on CBS. So not the very first one, but the first one on network TV was aired on CBS. And that was the old Kimbo Slice fight back. Yeah, I forget which organization it was, but it was back in 2008 and CBS aired it. So what is old is new again. And CBS, which we never thought this was going to happen, that CBS would get it back into mixed martial arts, but this is the new era of Paramount and CBS, and as you mentioned, perhaps a fight at the White House, which, you know, that guy, he's a big fan, a mixed martial arts fan, and he's friends with Dana White, so it could very well happen.
Yeah, I'm going to reserve comment on that.
Yeah, we'll reserve comment.
Yeah. So, well, the NBA schedule came out on Tuesday, and something interesting. We don't see the Boston Celtics in the Christmas Day schedule. We don't see the Eastern Conference champion Indiana Pacers on the Christmas schedule. Is that kind of surprising?
Well, you know, Jason Tatum got hurt, so and we don't know when he's going to come back. A lot of Boston Celtics fans are lamenting that. Of course, he got hurt in the playoffs last season, back in June. And, of course, the Indiana Pacers, it kind of just goes to show that maybe not ready, quite ready for prime time, Ken. So
plus a major injury there too.
Yeah, exactly. So you have that too. You've got all the situation. Plus the Western Conference has been like this, you know, along with when you have LeBron and you have Stephen Curry and you've got all these major players that are in the West. It's and not surprising. And so ESPN and ABC are going to have those five games. They're already leaked out by Sham Sharania a couple of days ago. So it's not surprising that to see that the fact that it's going to be mostly all Western Conference on Christmas Day. But is anyone going to be watching it anyway? Because we got two NFL games on Netflix that day, and we also have an Amazon game. So is anyone really going to be watching those games? We got a triple header on Christmas, and we all know how well they did on last Christmas Day on Netflix with the Tuesday afternoon, Tuesday night doubleheader on Christmas. So with triple header, I wouldn't be surprised if those ratings get dwarfed by the NFL, even if they're on streaming services that day.
You know, it's amazing to me. I think, I mean, the NHL does not play on, I mean, they take a few days off around Christmas. I think that's great. I mean, I would like to see maybe a game on Christmas Day of the NHL, but they would get shattered. There was no way they would, you know, get any eyeballs for a national game. So, I mean, they got the, obviously the outdoor classic, the winter classic. So that, you know, obviously that's their bread and butter on January 1st. So what are we hearing on Major League Baseball and ESPN, or what that deal is? Is anything going on at this point?
Well, if you remember earlier this season, ESPN opted out of their Major League Baseball deal and said that they're not going to come back after this season. Jimmy Pitaro has been talking, the president of ESPN has been talking with Rob Manfred, who is the commissioner of Major League Baseball. But so far, nothing new. Apple has kicked the tires. NBC has kicked the tires. Netflix is kicking the tires on the Home Run Derby. I would not be surprised, however, to see that ESPN will come back to Major League Baseball, but at a reduced price. They paid a premium for Sunday Night Baseball and the wild card games. The wild card games still aren't that popular because they're just adding an extra layer of playoffs, and it really hasn't resonated with fans as of yet. But I wouldn't be surprised to see them pay probably half of what they're paying, and maybe another partner comes in to get something to create a new package to at least make up for the money that ESPN is not going to pay. But I don't think MLB can afford to lose ESPN as a partner. We see what ESPN has meant to the NHL, then they brought it back. So I wouldn't be surprised if Major League Baseball and ESPN get back as partners somehow, but it's going to be a reduced price, and MLB will just have to live with it.
Yeah. One announcement that came out earlier on Tuesday, which should say, was NBC Universal and USGA extending the media rights through 2032, which, you know, on the surface, like, okay, no big deal, but apparently Netflix was seriously talking to the USGA. How much would that have stunned the golf world?
That would have been huge. I mean, Netflix already got the rights to the Women's World Cup in 2027 and in 2031. They have the U.S. rights. They'll probably put it on a broadcast partner coming up for when they get closer. But yeah, Netflix is really flexing its muscles here, and I wouldn't be surprised, Ken, to see it get a major package with the NFL, whether that's international package, which has been floated about. When the NFL goes to an 18-game season, I wouldn't be surprised that if it gets something else in a major as well. That would have been interesting if Netflix, I think NBC Universal saw that. I think a lot of sports leagues are going to use Netflix to drive up the price for their rights. And I'm not surprised that they decided to come in and at least kick the tires on the USGA. It would have been interesting to watch the U.S. Open on Netflix. Who they would have gotten to broadcast that, I don't know. But it would have been interesting, and definitely would have marked a new era. And it would have been a warning shot across the bow to all the broadcast networks, because that would have been the USGA, the U.S. Open has been a tentpole event on NBC Universal, except for a few years when it was on Fox. Ken, can you imagine that? A streaming service with the national championship, golf national championship.
I think there'll be a lot of people. I mean, I know, you know, I'm 61 years old. I probably complain about it. I mean, there's probably be golfers complaining, golf fans complaining about that. But that's the way things are now. We're getting, you know, streaming services are flexing their muscles and, you know, getting sports rights.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them get more. I mean, we see Amazon. Amazon has gotten the NFL. They have the NBA. They have the WNBA. They have the NWSL. They also have NASCAR. So And I wouldn't be surprised to see them get involved maybe with they have the NHL in Canada, yeah, too. They have the English Premier League in the UK. They had the English Premier League in the UK. They lost those rights. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Amazon and Netflix duke it out, and even Apple. Apple's rumored to that they're going to get Formula One next year, so Steve, Ken. So I don't know why I keep calling you Steven. I'm sorry about that. I don't know where that's
my son, my son is named Steven, so maybe that's it.
Maybe. I'm sorry. I don't know where that's coming from. I'm having a major brain freeze here. But anyway, Ken, I would not be surprised to see Netflix, Apple, and Amazon come in and get more rights and force the broadcast. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see all three of them get involved with the NFL rights when the opt-out comes out in 2029. I don't know what they're going to get, but they'll probably somehow get a major I wouldn't be surprised to get a major package, a primetime package, and take it away from one of the networks.
Well, that would be interesting to see what happens. Is there anything else that's floating your boat at this point?
Well, I know you're not a big WWE fan, no, but of course the WWPLEs are going to go to ESPN. Mm. They were on Peacock. They are on Peacock. They're going to go to do ESPN. It's going to be an interesting price point. $29.99 is the price that it's going to be for ESPN. WWE fans are very highly loyal. They will follow the sport, but at what price is $29.99 going to be too much for them? They've been paying $10.99 for Peacock for the ad tier. So we'll see if they're going to be interested to pay $20 higher to move to ESPN when the PLEs move there next year.
Well, sounds good. Well, Ken, I always appreciate your insight in the media, and we'll talk soon. Probably a lot more news coming up later this year.
Our feet just never sleep. Ken, I think it's going to be, you know, who said that August was the dog days of summer in sports media? It just keeps continuing.
Yeah, it's crazy. There's no off switch in sports world. So, Ken, as always, appreciate a few minutes, and we'll talk soon.
All right, Ken. Talk to you soon.
All right, that's Ken Fang from Awful Announcing. I'll be back to wrap up the podcast and have the latest winners in the Daily Gazette's auto racing contest in just a moment. Explore the benefits of subscribing to the Daily Gazette, like our convenient e-edition, app, personalized newsletters, and unique reader rewards when you join. Start your membership today. Offers redeemable at www.dailygazette.com.
Hi, I'm Stan.
And I'm Shen.
And each week we bring you the Stan and Shen Show. And each week we talk about fun things through our travels throughout the capital region. We touch on food, we touch on news, try to touch heavily on good news, and Shen's always available with hot takes.
Yeah, so if you could follow along and listen to us every week on dailygazette.com or on all major streaming platforms, we'd love to have you join us.
Hi, this is Union College women's hockey head coach Tony Macy. You're listening to the Parting Shots podcast with Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott.
Back to wrap up the podcast. The Week 24 winner in the Daily Gazette's auto racing contest was Karen Newman of Schenectady with 55 points. Karen wins a $50 gift card. Congratulations, Karen. The VIP winner was me. I had 30 points. The Week 25 winner was Tom Semela of Porter's Corners with 60 points. Tom wins a $50 gift card. Congratulations, Tom. The VIP winner was Jerry Peel of Frankensons with 40 points. Taking a look at the VIP standings, Scott Lusher of Capital Land GMC leads with 490. Jerry Peel is 20 points back with 470. Dwayne Leach of All Seasons Equipment has 350 points. Nick Platel of Grand Premier Tires has 305 points. I have 260. And Matt Margiotta of S&G Roofing has 80 points. I'll announce the auto racing contest winner's name, and that winner's name will appear in Saturday's Daily Gazette. To play, go to dailygazette.com and click on the Auto Racing Contest banner. Just because COVID-19 mandates are easing, that does not mean you should relax. Be vigilant. If you have not gotten vaccinated or received a booster shot, please do so. Do it for yourself, do it for your family, and do it for your friends. And as always, vaccines do not cause autism. Don't forget to download the Daily Gazette app and sign up for our e-edition so you never miss a headline. Subscribe today at www.dailygazette.com. We have a lot of great specials going on. When credibility matters, trust the Daily Gazette. That wraps up another edition of the Parting Shots podcast. I want to thank Mike McAdam and Ken Fang for coming on the show. If you have questions or comments about the podcast, email them to me at SCHOTT, that's S-C-H-O-T-T, at dailygazette.com. Follow me on X, Threads, and Blue Sky at Slapshots. The views expressed on the Parting Shots podcast are not necessarily those of the Daily Gazette Company. The Parting Shots podcast is a production of the Daily Gazette Company. I'm Daily Gazette sports editor Ken Schott. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next time. From the Parting Shots podcast studio in Schenectady, New York, good day, good sports.